Hey, podcast listeners, two quick notes before this episode. First, we hope you'll join us at our next reader listener meetup, which is next week on Wednesday, May 29th. Please stop by from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Growler USA on Blunt Street in downtown Raleigh. If you haven't attended one of these events, we host these with a few other bloggers and podcasters in Raleigh. It's very chill. Just come say hello, talk about Raleigh, development, transportation, whatever, and meet some cool people in real life. My second quick note is I do apologize for the sound quality on this episode, which is a bit rough due to the recording location plus a technical issue that I was experiencing. Anyway, now on to our episode. Hello and welcome to Inbound Raleigh, a podcast about transportation and transit in the city of Oaks. But today on our show, we are actually outside of the capital city. We're hanging out in Durham. And the reason we drove all the way out here was to meet with Aaron Lubeck, who wanted to share with us some info about bicycle boulevards and what's happening here in Durham. So welcome, Aaron.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to be here. So first, let's talk a little bit about what a bicycle boulevard is. Some of our listeners might not realize. At least according to the National Association of City Transportation Officials, these are streets that are designed to focus on bicycle use rather than cars. Sounds pretty good. They also say bicycle boulevards use signs, pavement markings, and speed and volume management measures. So Aaron, can you maybe put that in some layman's terms for us and talk about how that differentiates a bit when compared to like a protected bike lane?
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a great definition. Largely, bike boulevards are a movement that is pretty new in America, largely rooted in West Coast cities. Portland and Berkeley have the most comprehensive networks. Even a lot of the spirit of them is rooted more in Northern Europe and some of the better cities for biking like Copenhagen and Amsterdam. But that definition is exactly right. They're just slow streets that are first and foremost identified as streets with very, very low car volumes that are then improved, often in very light ways, to discourage through traffic and make them bike priority. So the best way to look at it is there's really only three bike priority infrastructure options, and those are greenways, cycle tracks, and bike boulevards. In North Carolina, the infrastructure is almost exclusively greenways, as we've got them throughout Raleigh and Durham, like the American Tobacco Trail. Cycle tracks are being talked about. You guys obviously did a pop-up recently, and those are great applications for downtown, for downtowns. And then bike boulevards are the perfect application for urban neighborhoods that are, not exactly downtown with the skyscrapers, but throughout what is, 90% of the footprint in urban Durham and 90% of the footprint in urban Raleigh.
Yeah, for sure.
Are pretty overwhelmingly the most efficient and best infrastructure choice to create a bike priority city.
Okay. So they say pavement markings, which might be as simple as a sharrow, but of course, as a lot of bike advocates and even some transit officials will tell you, sharrow's not very helpful. So can you talk more about a vision for what a bicycle boulevard looks like?
Sure. There's a great, our work was actually rooted in out of Portland State University and partnered with Alta Design, who has a presence here in Durham and in Portland, to create the bicycle boulevard guidebook or design guidelines. I should remember what that is, but if you look it up, it's basically a 30 or 40 page document on how to design bike boulevards. It's remarkably simple to understand. Anybody with any interest in biking or infrastructure sort of knowledge can skim through it in a half hour and get it. And you say, okay, I get it. These are the tools. And there's not an endless list. It's things like, whether it's speed bumps, it could be signage, it can be one of our favorite infrastructures that is all over Berkeley, are bike permeable barriers, which can be gorgeous sort of infrastructure where bulb outs create it so a car can't go through, but bikes can. But in Berkeley, they built those out of concrete planters. They're just movable. They're simple. They're inexpensive to do. And those are really effective at discouraging through traffic to create a bike priority street. But speed bumps are also options. Seattle is remarkable for how frequently they use neighborhood traffic circles. And to underscore that, we're talking about small 10 or 15 foot radii or circumference circles on neighborhood streets that are 28 foot wide. So they're not massive roundabouts. They're just like a tree in the middle of an intersection. And that's enough signal to people who are speeding to work or to school or whatever to just use another street. it's too much of a pain in the butt to speed down these streets because every intersection you have to slow down and go around. And some little, very little subtle design symbols like that make it clear that this is not a street for cars. And over time, they've seen in Portland, Alta said where they have a bike boulevard next to a street with an unprotected bike lane. They'll have 30 or 50 bikers on the bike lane, and literally one street over, they'll have 3,000 bikers on the bike boulevard. And it's just a function of, you know, seniors and kids and non-confident riders just won't ride in a bike lane, and they will ride when there's protected infrastructure.
Right. They won't ride in that unprotected bike lane, you're saying?
Correct. Right. Correct. Okay.
So why do you feel bicycle boulevards are a good solution for Durham?
It's a great question. My story is pretty personal in that I had 5 or 6 years ago when we started this effort, had young kids. They're still relatively young at 10 and 13, but found Durham a remarkably unsafe city to bike around, and particularly for them. And Durham is actually, in some ways, the perfect size and scale to be a biking city. The urban tier is roughly 3 miles wide by 4 miles tall, or vice versa, about 12 square miles, which means literally almost everywhere you go is less than the two-mile bike trip. So that's the ideal sort of length for biking. It's actually faster to get pretty much anywhere on a bike. So it's just a matter of safety. And so anyway, we went looking for solutions at the time I had a design build firm and knew most of these neighborhoods from working in them across the urban tier. And went looking for solutions and quickly came across what was out of Portland, a design guidelines booklet from Alta Design that describes what bike boulevards are, how they work, they're very easy to understand, et cetera, and took a kind of a schematic hack at, if we use these principles and overlaid them onto Durham, how would it work? And it was one of those moments, kind of a light bulb moment, where it didn't take more than a half hour to sort of realize, like, yeah, this works better than we even expected. Like, this should be a thing. And so hooked up with our other board members, or Allison Carpenter, who was at Duke but is now, I think, in Charlotte, Mark DeSauer and Josh Hahn. Mark, who I hadn't met until then, who did a lot of consulting work out in Portland, had independently done the exact same mental exercise. So you start to realize when people are starting to follow the same path to mm-hmm. come to the solution, you probably got a thing. And we had gotten together and decided to sort of design a solution and present it to the city and sort of raise community support for it. And that's how it got done. It was unique and a little bit weird how it was done, because infrastructure projects are generally not privately sourced. And that's a thing I think should probably be more and more of a process that cities or advocates should undertake. When cities are just too slow or not receptive to needs like bike infrastructure, organizations like Oaks and Spokes or Bike Durham or private citizens should just design the solutions and lobby for them themselves. That definitely, you know, is seen and can tread on people's turf, so to speak. And so how that gets done effectively is a whole debate. But I do think we're in a unique situation where technology and social media allows citizens to do that more than ever, and it should be a concept pursued.
Okay. So your vision for this, do you see these in conjunction with some cycle tracks, also known as protected bike lanes, as well? Or
absolutely. Each bike priority infrastructure has its place, and this is actually, North Carolina is a perfect place to describe this. Greenways are great for rural areas. Every once in a while, you will see them through urban areas, but they're the exception, not the rule. They tend to be on electrical easements, creek easements, or old rail spurs, and they are most applicable in suburban or rural areas. Bike boulevards are great for urban neighborhoods, which is, I think, to me, the core of the biking sort of demographic. People are more likely to, if they live near NC State and downtown Raleigh or Duke and downtown Durham, they're more likely to have a biking family than if they live in Traburn or out in Apex, per se. And then cycle tracks are almost exclusively a product of the urban core. You don't need a lot of them, but where you have them, they're intensely used Seattle's got some of the best. Vancouver's got some of the best as well. And those are absolutely necessary in both Durham and Raleigh. The challenge is, and it's always, from what I can see, has always been the friction point from bike advocates in the Triangle, as long as I've been around, is that bike infrastructure has almost exclusively been advocated for on state roads, which means to get any approvals for anything, you have to call Raleigh. You have to talk with Raleigh DOT, and in a fast-moving area, we all know sort of the long-running debate with road engineers designing bike infrastructure. It has been less than successful in doing so. And one of the big benefits of bike boulevards is that mostly, for the most part, these are on city streets, and it skips that crucial hurdle of having to get approval from NCDOT to build bike infrastructure. So that really matters. That is to say, cycle tracks don't have that luxury, and so there'll be bigger, messier, more important fights to get cycle tracks approved, because there's just so many. They're far more complex to do.
Right.
But they are necessary. And I would say when you look at the bike boulevard map of Durham, we cover the entire urban tier, 12 square miles, with four-block service. Never at any point be more than four blocks from a bike priority route, which is great, with the one exception of being downtown, which is the most crucial exception. And so to have the long-winded way of answering your question, the cycle tracks are absolutely needed. It sort of is the final, you know, quarter mile, half mile trip. If I want to go get ice cream at the parlor with my daughter downtown, I can get really close on boulevards, but I can't. But it's that last dangerous part that's going to need cycle tracks to get done.
Okay, and so they work together and complement each other.
No question about it.
You talked about a little bit of the resistance and struggles, of course, getting all this through the government channels, which, as we all know, is a challenge. What about the neighbors around the streets for these bicycle boulevards, though? At least in Raleigh, there's certainly a sense of resistance in some cases. You know, are you removing parking, for example?
Sure.
People really get upset about that. So sure. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, and it's one of the other benefits of bicycle boulevards is they're far less controversial in that that realm. They are largely taking neighborhood streets in Durham. All of our neighborhood streets are about 30 foot wide. The Triangle is remarkably not dense. So like people complain about parking no matter what, any change is ever proposed anywhere, people complain about parking. But when you look at the urban streets of Durham, and I think most of the urban streets in Raleigh, you know, the neighborhood streets like Boylan Heights, for example, they're like 20% parked. I mean, there's really not a parking problem in the Triangle. Like, we're not Brooklyn. We're not Chicago. And that's to say that bike boulevards, I don't think I've ever seen one that proposed to take out parking. There's no need to. In fact, the parking actually is what's the presence of parking on these 30-foot wide neighborhood streets is what slows cars in some ways. If you have a 30-foot street with no parking on it, it's really comfortable to drive 50 miles an hour on it. And so that it's less controversial to that effect because you don't have to displace parking for both residents or business needs. And the objections we've heard are, and I think they're minor, you know, somebody described on Twitter the other day, there's a whole subset of people that are recreationally anti, is how they defined it. It's just like people who, you know, some people go to the park or some people like baseball. Some people like just showing up at stuff and saying no.
Yeah, they make a hobby of complaining.
And honestly, of all the advocacy work I've ever done, and I do a lot of work in housing, which is more controversial than bikes, but like bike boulevards for kids is like, it's kind of like ice cream. Nobody doesn't like it. Like if you show up to protest the idea of kids biking more, like you definitely qualify as recreationally anti. Right? But we did hear things. I think that the objections were if it was limiting access to people's homes, would people have to take a different route to get to work? We heard one person say, like, if this takes me 7 seconds longer to get to Whole Foods, then I'm opposed. It's like, no, this does not make sense. But I guess
they literally said that?
Literally said that.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's just reactions to anything, any change, I think most humans don't do well with. But this is probably the softest, you know, change that can be proposed for transportation. Like it's, and so it's interesting. It was interesting to see it, but I think overwhelmingly we had an extraordinary amount of support. We had some corporate sponsors who saw this. Blue Cross Blue Shield sponsored us to improve health in their cities. They were interested in doing that potentially in other cities. American Tobacco sponsored us partially because the owner there wants to have more biking community. He would like to bike to work, and they have a parking problem. And so there's, and then we have a couple hundred people in our Facebook group and citizens, and it's a couple hundred people that funded us through Kickstarter as well. That are, you know, I think the support was overwhelming, but there's always going to be a few naysayers.
Of course. You're kind of starting to touch on the organization you've created around this movement, and it's just called Durham Bicycle Boulevard.
That's
is that right?
That's
but
right.
You're not a 501c3, but can you explain a little bit more about how your group is set up and
sure.
its membership?
Our intent, and most of the projects that I do, I think it's easier to attract people to them when they have a defined end.
Mm-hmm.
Indefinite projects are harder to get people on board and excited about. And so from the beginning, our goal was to create a bike priority network across urban Durham. And once that is done, then to cease to exist and go on to other things, whatever they might be. So because of that, and we realized from our drawings and schematic work that this really wasn't that complex. This is, you know, identify what turned out to be about 15 miles of streets, propose infrastructure that could meet these goals, and then lobby for an organization and the city to implement these and then sort of go away. So because of that, we actually didn't think it was necessary to do a 501c3. We partnered with East Coast Greenway, wonderful folks also in Durham. If you haven't done an interview with them, you should track down Mark. He's a wonderful interview. So that was our sort of vessel. And I think when things are only intend to exist for a very short period of time, there's almost no reason to go
sure.
do the nonprofit filing.
How many members do you have or people?
Well, and it's hard to say. I think we had... formal members, I wouldn't even track it that way. That's a good thing for like Bike Durham would be our biggest proxy, who's fast growing under the leadership of board chair Landis Masnor. But our group, I think we probably got 400 or 500 people in the Facebook group. We probably had 200 or 300 people fund through the Kickstarter. And then our board is just 3 members.
Right now.
So we're fairly small.
Well, great. So let's get to the fun part, which is when and where are these going to be installed?
Yes, that's what we've been working on for so long. So these are supposed to be installed by the end of the year after almost 5 years of advocacy, which will be exciting to see.
Oh, wow.
So currently they're in a design phase, wrapping a design phase with Alta Design out of Durham, and then it will go to final engineering and implementation. And again, it's sort of in some ways that sounds more complex than it is because these are largely signage, road painting, and, you know, speed bump here or there. They're not very all that complex, and so they should be easy to implement relatively quickly. The plan right now is they're going to, the grant that they got from federal DOT for CMAQ funding, it's a long story, we'll implement the first 7 miles of it, and then our advocacy is focused on getting the city to rapidly fill out a phase 2 to complete the second 7 or 8 miles, which should mostly complete our mission. That's where we want to be.
So I think you sent me a link, so I'm going to link to the full list of where these are located, but
sure.
Maybe just give me like the couple.
Yeah. So, I don't know how many folks in Raleigh know the Durham streets very well, but the couple that are most obvious is Watts Street through Trinity Park. It's about 1 block east of East Campus.
Mm-hmm.
It is the perfect example of a bike boulevard because there are no other great biking streets for kids and seniors to get in and out of downtown from the north side. It is bounded by its surrounding streets, are Buchanan, where people go 45 miles an hour, and then Duke and Gregson, which are sort of speedway arterials. And so those are car streets. We don't want to stop them from being car streets. That's fine. But Watts in the middle is this perfect, wonderful neighborhood street. And most mornings now you see more bikes on it than cars, which is just beautiful to see. Some of the other ones that we'll see are Iredell, which services both Ninth Street and Broad Street on the other side of Duke's East Campus. Out in East Durham, Taylor Street is this little street almost nobody has ever talked about, but it's a perfect sort of neighborhood street that is an east-west route running to serve most of the East Durham Historic District. There's a couple over the Southwest District over on Arnett, getting into Moorhead Hill, and so forth. But those are the kind of streets we see. Most of them have less than 500 cars a day, and a full network should be signed to make clear that these are like priority routes as part of the infrastructure.
When we spoke earlier, you mentioned to me that you feel there are a lot of lessons you learned in this process that you wanted to share because you thought maybe some other triangle cities and towns would benefit. So can you talk more about that?
Yeah, I think on a couple layers, we did the schematic work to design bike boulevard networks is like remarkably easy. Like read the Portland guidelines, and anybody in Raleigh could take that and Google Earth and like draw a network for discussion, and it wouldn't take that long to do. Encourage everybody to do it. We did that for every major city in North Carolina, and we think it's a program that works remarkably well, where if there was buy-in for this, these are cheap to implement, they're relatively uncontroversial, they're very effective, that if there was buy-in, if Raleigh could lead, or if there was buy-in even at the state, I mean, North Carolina there's a vision that North Carolina could really be like the Oregon of the East Coast pretty quickly to buy into this. So I think it does have applicability, and it's something that Oaks and Spokes and other leaders in Raleigh should absolutely look at. On the downside, I would say it shouldn't have been as hard as this was to get implemented. Like these are really light infrastructure that we need to figure out ways to get innovative leaders willing to experiment. And I would underscore it saying the concept is basically tactical urbanism. I highly recommend the book by Tony Garcia and Mike Lydon called Tactical Urbanism. All it is advocating for ways and methods to do what was done in Raleigh last month with the pop-up bike cycle track. We need to see things like that once a month. And some of them will become permanent. Some of them will last a weekend. Some of them will last a month. Some, you know, we could do a month or two long cycle track. And maybe that's what the business owners need to say, gosh, this really isn't that bad. Or gosh, I lose some parking, but maybe more bike people come in, or maybe it's more pedestrian oriented, so I can put a cafe out in the front. Anyway, I would say I think it's a problem across the triangles that governments are becoming more risk averse and less innovative. And particularly when we talk about incrementalism, when we talk about small scale change, there's a massive and growing resistance towards trying things. And that's has to change. And so in the spirit of, we were just mentioning it, Jane Jacobs' 100 and I think 3rd birthday is tomorrow, but she was sort of the primary advocate for incrementalism, for experimentation, for trying things out to see if they work, and that we need to do more of that in Durham.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Aaron. Really appreciate it. I'm going to be linking to the Durham Bicycle Boulevard Facebook page as well as some other information about all of this in our show notes, and you can find that on our website, that's inboundraleigh.com. And I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts out there about bicycle boulevards. Please share those via email at inboundraleigh@gmail.com, or you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time.
The bus. Ha-ha. Ho-ho. Scheiße, wo ist mein Gas?